Hi there, my name's Doug, and I am the fool because I'm about to talk about Rick Warren, and I have never read the purpose-driven anything.
Hello there, I'm Eric, and I am the fool because I am getting paid to be a pastor, and I'm still saying things on the internet that I shouldn't.
Hi, I'm Nick, and I'm the fool because I have no idea why I'm the fool.
All right, so the topic we decided on for this inaugural podcast is the Right Reverend Rick Warren, which with a stutter is going to kill me. So I won't say that again. Rick Warren is the pastor at Saddleback Church. It's an enormous mega church, a mega mega church.
20,000 in worship on a Sunday morning.
That's right. That is mega by any measure. And well, there are a lot of things to talk about with Rick Warren, but the main thing that provoked me were his comments on Hannity and Combs, which is a show I normally would never watch.
Yeah, I do want to know what you were doing watching Fox News.
I wasn't. I was watching a clip posted to another blog of Fox News.
Whew!
No, I mean, if you balance Fox News in one hand and a root canal in the other, I'm stumped. I don't know which way to go. So, no, I don't normally watch it. But the comments I'm referring to are posted on the blog, so if people want to listen to them, they can.
In case they're under a rock. In future podcasts, we'll try and figure out how to do it all at one, but, you know.
Right, our technical mastery is not so great in this one.
So the clip is posted on the post labeled Background Information for Episode 1.
Right.
Friday, January 16th was the post.
Right.
And it's the clip where he's saying outrageous things to Sean Hannity.
Exactly. Or Google Rick Warren, Sean Hannity, and you will get 100 things
billion.
Where that's been posted.
Yeah.
So the comments amounted to this, that the United States should murder foreign leaders who threaten us, and that God would totally approve of this.
Yeah, assassinate.
And it would be excellent. And they seemed to be in total accord with this, and then they ended with a bit of banter about how if someone breaks into Rick Warren's house, he's going to shoot them, and how much Jesus would smile at that idea.
So the actual,
wow, okay.
The actual,
I don't know if that was quite fair, but
the literal word for word transcript, real quick, because Hannity phrases the question in a specific way, and
he
Warren just sort
it,
of affirms what Hannity says. Hannity says, "Can you talk to rogue dictators? Ahmadinejad denies the Holocaust, wants to wipe Israel off the map, and is seeking nuclear weapons. And I think we need to take him out." Warren says, "Yes." Hannity says, "Am I advocating something dark?" And Warren says, "Well, actually, the Bible says that evil cannot be negotiated with. It just has to be stopped. The Bible says that God puts government on earth to punish evildoers, not good doers, evildoers."
I'm quite sure that, George W. Bush says that. I'm not sure where that's in the Bible, that we can't negotiate with evildoers.
Yeah.
Well, the
I love chapter and
fascinating
verse for that
thing
movie.
Is that I actually read where someone contacted Saddleback Church and asked them for the specific citation that Warren was talking about, where the Bible says that the government was put there for that, and he's assuming, as I did too when he said it, that he was referring to Romans 13, which is the passage that Paul talks about the government being given the sword not in vain but to execute justice, and yet it's absolutely clear there that the Bible is talking about the government prosecuting criminals, you know, in their own state, not talking about going and committing
an act of warfare against another nation. I don't know. The one that I would be interested in, if I'm in a room with Rick Warren and I get to ask him one question about this comment, I'm asking him, where does it say that we can't negotiate with evil? I'm actually not as interested in terms of the whole, like, that's what the government's put here to do and keep us safe business. It doesn't bother me nearly as much as the, like, we can't negotiate with evil, because that extrapolated just becomes much more problematic.
Yeah, it's basically like a grenade dropped in the middle of any attempt at negotiating.
Yeah, exactly.
Because, evil, so I leave the table and I start shooting.
Yeah.
And
That's my major problem with this argument. Not so much this, like, well, the government has its role and protected people and, If that means
well, and it's
murder,
such an
I mean,
easy
like,
equation that just gets missed that it goes from the government immediately to the American government. Which government is the Bible talking about here? So American government is legitimate
government.
Use of force to punish evildoers, including governments of other nations, but the Iranian government is not legitimate? What constitutes a legitimate government? I don't think that based on the reading of any reading of Romans 13 that you can immediately leap to the idea that, you know, America has a right to go around bombing other countries
if anything,
or assassinating
you know, in,
leaders of other nations.
In the actual pages of the Bible, God's depicted as using what is now Iran as a means of executing God's justice. So if anything, we should be ducking our heads waiting for the Iranians to, you know, use the sword against us. If we're going biblically, quote unquote.
Yeah. It wouldn't be the first time that in Scripture where you encounter government taking out government.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is problematic in itself. And I think the problem for me with this is more the negotiation of evil. Because if you want to talk about who's government and who's legit, like that starts with this assumption that you can't negotiate with evil. That's the problem. If you eliminate that kind of foundational groundwork to his statement, then you start to have all kinds of different problems when you start to talk about governments negotiating and punishing and all those kind of things.
I agree. I think that is another major problem with it.
So this comment raises like all the issues that we've talked about, but one for me and why I think I wanted to talk about Rick Warren, and when Doug suggested it, I jumped on the idea, because I think for me, making a public statement like this, this is you got to hand over your pastoral credentials at that point. In my mind, you fail at Christianity. Warren, now I'll give him the benefit of the doubt and say, you know, Hannity does this with all of his guests, and this is he could easily have just gotten himself caught in a position he didn't want to, and maybe he was kicking himself the day after about those remarks. But regardless, I want to ask him very seriously, how can you possibly claim to be a follower of the Prince of Peace and ever make a comment like, yeah, let's assassinate someone? Anyone. Pick a person. I don't care who that person is.
Well, that's where I would disagree with you. I personally agree that I'm not going to go out and assassinate someone, regardless.
We appreciate it.
But there are lots of legitimate Christians out there, that people of deep faith that follow and do think that, I mean, specifically, let's just jump to the ultimate situation and talk about the Holocaust. There were lots of Christian efforts to assassinate Hitler, and full of life and interest.
Right.
And I mean, like Dietrich Bonhoeffer has books, just book upon book, upon his struggle with this whole idea of whether or not to assassinate someone. So I think to jump to say that someone automatically fails Christianity because they call for an assassination, I wouldn't go that far. I don't particularly think that Jesus would ask you to assassinate someone in a situation, but I think there are legitimate Christians out there who would make that argument.
And they're welcome to, but I think, well, this brings up another issue about the idea of assassinating Hitler, and the delusion that that would have done a whole lot. I mean, we're dealing with a whole country that was largely in agreement with him and supporting him. Many of them knew what was going on and didn't intervene. Hitler had dozens of cronies that would love to take his place. And so, I mean, there's no reason to think that assassinating Hitler or Ahmadinejad wouldn't just galvanize their supporters to become even worse. And if you look at history, that's what tends to happen.
And I also don't buy the Bonhoeffer argument, because Bonhoeffer, this is not Warren here making a case, making an argument for assassinating Ahmadinejad. This is Warren making very ill thought out comments in a rash way on any basis have to be considered immoral, and Bonhoeffer did actually go through a huge amount of anguish, and his final conclusion was that what he was deciding to do was wrong. His ultimate conclusion was he did not think what he was doing was good or right. It was against Christianity. It was un-Christian.
Okay. And
he didn't think there was an option for him in the situation,
and I will totally
which was
that.
Christian. And I disagree. I disagree. I think Bonhoeffer at that point in time was wrong. But you can't equate the two because you can't. Well, Warren is trying to say the good Christian thing to do is kill someone. Bonhoeffer never said that.
I don't think that's what he's saying. Say that. I think you're taking that and extrapolating it. I don't think that you're talking about. I mean, from everything that I've heard and experienced and read from Rick Warren, I don't think he's actually sort of talking about assassination as lightly as you take it.
I hope not, because he's a really influential guy.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think he is.
Well, what do you think he's saying then? What do you take from this?
What I think he's saying is that if he were in a situation where he was Dietrich Bonhoeffer, he would come out at the end and say, this is what we have to do, and this is what we should do, and this is. I think he would say that this is what God backs, but I don't think he's saying that we should just go around and assassinate any kind of situation that comes up that we don't like.
No, but he really is making a difference there.
It's fair too.
Go ahead, Eric.
He jumps with basically a complete eisegetical reading of Romans 13 straight into comments that have, you know, if he's thought this out, he sure didn't demonstrate it in his public statements because he didn't provide any basis that you could have thought you could regard his arguments as thoughtful. They were rushed, they were callous, and he isn't doing what Bonhoeffer did, which is making the ethical judgment Bonhoeffer personally chose. He says, you know what, this is a horrible thing to do. I'm not saying someone should do this. I'm saying I will take the responsibility on myself. If Warren wants to, you know, deck himself out in some camo and pick himself up a rifle and flog himself in his soul for months and years on end before he decides this is the right thing and then make the sacrifice, I might have more respect for him. I still think he's wrong, but that's not what he's doing.
Well, that's my argument. My argument isn't that the comment that he made is right, because I don't think that, but I want to give him some due in terms of saying, like, I can't automatically pull his Christian card, which we should have a whole argument about, and maybe we need to talk about podcast topic.
Episode 2.
But there, you know, that idea, I don't want to try and pull his Christian card.
I do want to sort of.
I wish
mention...
I could revoked.
I do want to, you know, definitely address the fact, you know, the context of which these statements were made was with Sean Hannity. And I imagine that being with him is sort of like being in the aura of a brain cell killing kind of radiation that sort of lobotomizes you just by proxy. Because his show is hard to watch. I imagine it's much harder to be on it. And not even,
you know,
get shouted
here for,
down.
Two friars and a fool to listen to people who are unbiased and always make the most generous assumptions about.
We do. I make really generous assumptions about Sean Hannity.
I do.
I give him all the benefit I can bring myself to.
I will give you all of those assumptions. I got no issues there.
You know, and obviously I'm exaggerating here, but I do think that, you know, it is a situation that is hostile to reason.
Yeah.
And I think you can watch the show and hear that. There's a lot of shouting and not very much thinking that goes on. Kind of like the presentation of evil, that you can't negotiate it. I think you also can't negotiate with Sean Hannity. Now, if you'd like to use the transverse property there, that's up to you. I'm just laying it out there, and people can think whatever they want to think. That's fine. I'm just leaving that. I'm just hanging that out.
So do we need to have a contest about your comment about someone assassinating Sean Hannity?
So
that's what I think you just said.
I don't know what you're talking about. Eric, you're gonna say something
wrong.
Now the other thing we need to talk about here is the fact that although this was the probably the key thing that incited our choice to discuss Rick Warren, I mean this comment doesn't happen in isolation either. He has said and done a lot of things in the public eye in the last year. And a lot of those things he's said and done have been controversial, praised by some, disliked by others. Mm-hmm.
So let's take a moment to talk about stuff that we think is awesome about Rick Warren. Let's give him some mileage here. And change gears for a minute.
Oh, you want to change? Okay,
yeah,
you want to change?
Because he has done stuff that, I mean, it isn't like he's a villain. I just think he said a terrible thing.
I would agree.
Aggravated me. But I think he has done some things, especially, you know, being a Southern Baptist, he's broken from the mold there in a lot of meaningful ways.
His AIDS ministry, for example.
Yes.
Awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, his acknowledgement of AIDS as a problem we should address as churches.
Well, right. And
is great.
A lot of that credit goes to his wife. I mean, she is the one, for whatever reason, I mean, like, I heard she had an interview on NPR, it was the two of them, and she was talking about how she walked into a newsstand and just, for whatever reason, felt like God was telling her to pick up this article. She read an article about AIDS in Africa, and she decided to do something about it. She spent some of her newfound fortune from this, from his book, and she went and she traveled around, and she was like, she tried to really figure out what the problem was and how to address it. She came back, she got him and a lot of other people involved in doing it. So AIDS ministry is really cool.
Didn't Rick Warren also donate the vast majority of the proceeds from his books?
The
95%. He donates 90% of his salary every year, and of all of his income every year. And he has paid back his salary. He takes no salary from Saddleback Church, and he's paid it back for all the years that he's worked there as well. So based off the proceeds of his book, he has paid back everything he's ever earned in ministry, and he gives back 90% of what he earns
they
every
call
year
it
now.
Reverse tithing is what
reverse tithing, yeah.
They live on 10%.
So he lives off of 10% of his income.
And give away 90%.
That is, I mean, that's really commendable. That is amazing, and a thing that a lot of people in his position, wealthy and famous and successful, do not do that.
A lot of pastors in his position, let's make it even narrower. There's a bunch of guys out there right now who need to turn their Bentleys in and think a little bit about what Jesus said.
Bentleys for AIDS orphans. That would be a great, very focused sort of charity for megachurch pastors.
Right. So, I mean, his AIDS ministry, I mean, and all of this comes out, he actually has a whole, what he calls his peace
Initiative. Yeah. Initiative. Or whatever it is.
That is like a whole movement that is designed for other churches to pick up and follow that includes all these things, education and healthcare and these things which are, well, normally the bailiwick of progressives that he is pushing hard for and really doing good stuff with.
Well, and I think, I mean, to speak personally about my experience with Rick Warren is I had actually heard of him before all of you probably did. I read Purpose Driven Church. The youth pastor at Saddleback Church has a similar kind of thing, and he spoke at a lot of national youth worker conferences. Mm-hmm. And he had some really great seminars and stuff to talk about growing your youth group, and a lot of his things were kind of drawn out of Rick Warren's things. And so I went and got Rick Warren's A Purpose Driven Church, and it's a little businessy for me personally, but it's very good in terms of talking about growth and focusing on it through personal growth, not just numerical growth, and looking at it as being transformative and small group ministries, all kinds of really good life-changing things that actually operate on that level.
So it comes off a bit as sort of a business manual, but behind it is some valuable stuff you thought.
I really did. I mean, I implemented some of the things in my youth ministry. I did.
Did you grow
some
your church?
I mean, well, arguably. I mean, it depends on what you want to talk about with growth, but yeah.
I have not read Purpose Driven Church. I have read Purpose Driven Life, I read that a few years ago, and I didn't like it. I'll admit it. I found it the businessy side of it was just way too much, and not just and I guess the businessy side isn't what I mean. It did come off a little bit health and wealth. It did come off a little bit like if you just love God enough, then you'll really be happy and fulfilled and get the things you want, and that you know there's nothing really in the Bible about.
It
you
is.
Know,
well,
Christian suffering.
I mean, in my reading of Purpose Driven Life, I think the issues that I had with it were some of the issues that I have with Southern Baptist theology in general.
Right.
So that's part of it. I mean, like part of it is, you know, that I had, that was my reaction to some of the stuff. Others of it, like the sort of, I don't know that it was, I mean, I would not put it in prosperity gospel. I wouldn't talk about it as health and wealth in terms of you know, love God more and you'll get more. I mean, there is plenty of talk in there about sacrifice and reflecting on what you've done and giving, like working with your neighbor,
right,
rebuilding relationships, all of those things.
Also, honestly, the way he lives, you know, leading by example seems to demonstrate a lot of self-sacrifice and restraint and generosity, all of which are virtuous, I think. It's, you know, mm-hmm, sort of apart from whatever his book might not say.
Yeah.
He seems to be living out self-sacrifice.
And I think that if he were to rewrite Purpose-Driven Life, I think it would reflect things slightly differently now. I think he's grown as an individual, and I think he would say that. I mean, in the interviews that I had heard with him, that's he credited a lot of personal growth and transformation around this AIDS ministry and getting involved through his wife and really kind of realizing how much of the Bible actually talks about the poor.
Yeah.
So
who would have thought?
I
do have to say, though, I mean, it does come off a little funny to me. A guy been in ministry for 26, 28 years now.
Something
and
like that.
Since he was very young. And,
he started
he had an awful big church before he realized that God cared about poor people. You know, no, all credit to him. He clearly does live out a very virtuous manner in relation to his money and his generosity.
Well, and his personal.
But I'm not sold 100% that
his wife and him. I mean, they talk about you know, a lot of the counseling that they do together, the work that they do, and she talks a lot about him in his own personal life and his own personal, like, does he live the way he talks? And she says he does. And so if his either
she's a biased reporter,
yeah,
but
well,
yeah,
even if they're total, you know, it's like I give that credit because that comes from somewhere other than his mouth.
That's true.
And he talked about in one of the podcasts that I heard about a file that he keeps in his office where every time a mega church pastor gets in trouble for a scandal, he cuts the article out and he puts it in the file and he stores it in his desk. And every couple months he pulls this big old file out and he reads it. Just so that he can say, like he said, so it puts the fear of God back into me and
uh-huh,
keeps me on the straight and narrow. I mean, that was the sort of language he used. And so, like, those are steps to kind of not allow yourself to be kind of perverted with power and privilege and
right,
money. And it seems to me that he's living that way.
Mm-hmm. So now that we've spent some time talking about good things about him, I'd like to turn on him again. Like a pack of rabid dogs, and to take some time to talk about his position on homosexuality, which differs drastically from mine, and I speculate from some of my fellow friar/fools. Actually,
well,
I don't speculate. I know.
Okay,
exactly.
So the first thing we ought to say here is, for background for our listeners, is that he was a public, outspoken supporter of Prop 8 in California,
yes,
last year, which was passed on the election,
yes,
which was the proposition which said that we
remove
ban
the right of
marriage between anyone but a man and a woman.
Right.
So he came out and was a major supporter of it, and that's the main reason why there's been so much backlash to him being the inaugural prayer.
It is a hot issue, especially in the state, and it's, you know, all over the country it's a hot issue, very contentious.
Absolutely.
And I
so,
contend with him.
And when he was doing that, in his video to his congregation that he gave them for his arguments for why he was against Prop 8, he compared homosexuality to pedophilia, to pederasty, to incest, and a variety of other kinds of sexual relationships, which he said, you know, which he was arguing were comparable.
Yeah.
He has since recanted that.
Yeah.
In various ways. He has since in videos said, I wish I hadn't made those comments. I didn't say what I meant. I don't think homosexuality is the same as pederasty. But I do think that marriage is just between a man and a woman. And if we open marriage up to a consensual homosexual relationships, then we have to deal with arguments for why we wouldn't open marriage up to other things as well, like pedophilia and so on and so forth.
Which is interesting because, just as a side comment, the idea that marriage is only between a man and a woman who are consenting adults is foreign to the Bible. The marriages there are arranged. They're between people who are wildly different in age. When I did an adult education class during my internship, I did a whole section on marriage because I found it interesting. I found 8 different kinds of marriage in the Bible, none of which were specifically what's described by, say, the Southern Baptist Convention or the Republican Party. So I take this with a big grain of salt, this argument that there's one kind of biblical marriage. I think that the Bible itself contradicts that very loudly and very consistently.
And the people who are saying that there is one kind of biblical marriage are saying this now. They're more intelligent voices are saying this now on the basis of a philosophical argument called complementarianism, and they're saying that the Bible, in its whole, puts forward a doctrine of complementarianism, which says that man and woman were created by God jointly. God created them male and female, and that one fleshness of man and woman is what marriage is about and designed to represent. And they have a whole series of biblical arguments for it and why it is biblical or not. But they don't have, in my opinion, good arguments for why everything else that marriage is represented in the Bible is not biblical.
Polygamy is the standard biblical marriage.
That's what I was going to say.
Polygamy between a man who owns land and women who may or may not be consensual to the whole arrangement. That's standard issue. In the Bible.
If we want to go and enact that in America, then I don't get to be married because I don't own any land.
It's a good point.
And it's certainly not consensual in the sense that we understand it, where we define adulthood at a very specific age and with a whole series of rules and regulations and rights. Which
18 is middle age in Bronze Age Palestine.
Which is interesting because it actually does change state to state what age you can be legally married in. In a lot of states, like I believe in Indiana, I actually don't know, so I shouldn't probably say, but I think it's 16 for the female to be legally married.
And it's different for
it's
the guy?
It's differently for the – the guy has to be 18.
Oh, no.
Or it's either 18 and 21, but it is set up differently, so the girl can be younger.
And I remember reading that in West Virginia, it's a lot younger. It's like in the teens with parental consent.
Sorry to our hundreds of readers and listeners from West Virginia.
Yeah, well, I'm just
we can pull all kinds of Jim Crow laws out in California anywhere else too.
That also might be a blue law. I'm just saying that we've constructed marriage in a way that is distinct from the Bible and the way the Bible constructs it.
And one thing that really pisses me off about this continual bringing it up and again is you'll hear people repeatedly, blithely make this statement that they want to change the definition of marriage that has always been.
Yeah.
Always been. Every time, every place, every culture, every religion. And they say it just so easily as if it had any bearing on reality at all, when it clearly does not. Anywhere around the world today, you can go to dozens of different countries to find radically different understandings of what marriage is. Many of those definitions do not include the core conservative American man, one man, one woman of consenting adult age.
Right.
You know, it doesn't include that.
I totally agree with you. I mean, I think that if we're just talking about the issue, I'm on board 100% with what you guys have been talking about, what I've been throwing in. But when we talk about what Rick Warren said and when he was looking at comparing it and what he said even after the fact as he's detracted the comparative statements, he was saying that he was talking about how he doesn't want – he nuances the position for a Southern Baptist. He actually says that in terms of civil rights, we should be doing things that further civil rights between monogamous homosexual individuals.
Okay, so I hate to be the skeptic here. No, I don't. I love being the skeptic here.
Yeah.
The thing is that we do have to remember his congregation is in California.
No, I know.
He has 20,000 people every Sunday morning who are coming to his church that, and this guy is not – he would not have a 20,000-person congregation tomorrow if he, came out and said, actually, I think homosexuals should be treated as second-class citizens across the board, and we should revoke all sense of civil decency toward them.
Wait, that coming out with that kind of position would necessarily hurt his – congregational size as much as you may think it would.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, hopefully we'll never have to test it since he's an influential guy, and I hope he doesn't come out and say stuff like that.
Yeah.
That'd be a problem.
I just don't know. I mean, even if he came out and said exactly what we wanted to hear or exactly the opposite of what we wanted to hear, I'm not sure that's going to affect his congregational growth element in the way that we might expect it would.
Right.
But I also think we need to make sure
it is interesting to
we
look
say
at.
Clearly, or I want to say yeah. clearly, that whether he meant the comparison or whether he's retracted it in the state of the comparison between homosexual and pederasty is bogus, and people
I
need
totally
to stop
agree.
It.
Yes. 100%.
Amen,
agree.
Hallelujah.
One
that could actually be another episode.
One involves like incalculable damage done to a child which fundamentally cannot consent, and one is a loving relationship between two people with all of the same flaws and problems that any other relationship
yeah,
can have.
It is potentially loving. I mean, heterosexual marriages have, what, a 50-50
yeah.
success rate?
Yeah.
So it isn't like we've figured it out ourselves, we being heterosexuals.
But that's another interesting point when you talk about preparing and controlling and holding back the institution of marriage, like, oh, we're going to control it and protect it
right.
and all that sort of thing. Well, we're not doing a very good job in your definition of the institution of marriage, so we've
yeah.
got a lot of work to do there, regardless if we want to talk about, protecting it. You're protecting a 50%
right.
failure rate.
Yep.
That's not something to be super proud of.
Now, I do
a
50% think,
failure rate and more than that in infidelity rate. So.
Well, that's true.
I do think, as Nick gently pointed out earlier, we have turned aside from Rick Warren, which might be telling.
Yeah.
Is there more stuff we want to talk about Rick
well,
Warren?
Well, I do.
I want to
talk about
an
article that I read and a blog post by Melissa Etheridge. She talked to Rick Warren.
Mm-hmm.
She was headlining some kind of tour thing that, I don't know, there was some kind of mixture between the two of them in terms of their companies. And she was doing something when he said this. And she saw some of the Prop 8 stuff that happened in his church. And she was going to pull out of this tour or whatever was going on. I don't know all the specific details. But what I do know is that she thought to herself and talked about, well, what should I really be doing here? And she told her production company or whoever that she wanted to talk to him.
Mm-hmm.
And so they contacted Rick Warren at his church or whatever, and they got his cell phone number or whatever and gave it to her, or he got hers or whatever. I think
they spoke
and then,
on the phone.
And he called her. And they talked for a while, and they got together, and she had some really positive things to say about him after the fact.
Interesting.
She said things in terms of how they bonded. I guess Melissa Etheridge's wife and Rick Warren's wife both went through breast cancer, so they like shared some commonality on that ground, and they talked a lot of things. And from what Melissa Etheridge said in her post, she was talking about how he seemed to have a much more nuanced approach to marriage and homosexuality and Christianity, especially conservative Christianity, than she had really experienced before. So I don't know all the details of
right.
what they really talked about, but I think that's impressive to me.
So
that
hold
an
on.
Individual in a megachurch like that, Rick Warren took the time. I mean, granted, it's Melissa Etheridge,
yeah.
and you know, it's sort of
you don't want to tell her off. She's
yeah,
pretty
exactly.
famous too.
But
now, hold
yeah.
on.
He took the time.
Hold on one cotton picking minute,
yeah.
Nick, to bring things full circle. Are you telling me that two people who might be construed as enemies can meet each other and find common ground and empathize and negotiate out a nuanced position?
Interesting.
Are you mad?
Crazy.
Maybe we can.
Yeah.
Sean Hannity
started
said
that conversation.
Can't happen, Nick.
Rick
that
Warren
means it can't
started
happen.
That conversation by saying that he said, "Before you say anything, Melissa, I want to let you know I'm a huge fan," and he owns most of her albums.
Yeah.
So flattery gets you a long
he's
way.
He's been subverted.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, but
he's been turned. We should get him some Ani DiFranco and push him over the edge. Now you're ours, buddy.
Yeah.
Enjoy the chick rock.
Okay. But I mean, I just wanted to throw that out because I do think that's important too. The fact that
yeah.
I mean, like whatever his particular biblical stance on the issue is, the fact that he's trying to work it out with individual, you know, like,
mm-hmm.
And that was one of the things they talked about in the interview with his wife and him talked about when they were talking about the AIDS ministry. They were talking about how she was like, we don't know any orphans and widows. And that's a problem.
I agree.
And so I think that there's a lot of, like, yeah, he said some really inflammatory things that I don't want to agree with. But, like...
So it's not enough to just haul the guy out.
I'm all about calling out his comments. It was interesting because I didn't know that much about Rick Warren personally until we talked about doing this. And then I went and looked and I experienced both sides of the issue. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I was more impressed. I was sort of like, I'm not going to be the Rick Warren apologetic in this podcast, but
you are,
I am. I'm not upset about that now because I learned a lot about what he did. And in my own way, I have newfound respect for Rick Warren that, you know, like, well, I probably wouldn't go to his church and I'm not a huge purpose-driven life fan. Like, I have a newfound respect for him, so I'll give him credit.
Okay. Eric, do you have anything else you want to say about Rick Warren?
Yeah, I think if I have any – where I've been left with this in my opinion on the guy is he's not an out-and-out villain. He said some things that are crazy that can't possibly jive with him understanding the gospel, and I would love to have him corner him in a room sometime and question him. But ultimately what I think my skeptical opinion of him is that he's a businessman who is very good at being playing the role he is, and I say that without meaning it to be entirely derogatory. He clearly does do some wonderful things with his ministry. But he also knows how to say what's the right thing at the right time. And, you know, I think that I don't believe.
Well, it is interesting to me that he manages to make these slip-ups in the presence of individuals who would not make it seem like a slip-up.
Right.
Yeah, well, it's exactly. It's like when he's with Shannity, he says, let's kill Ahmadinejad. When he's talking to Melissa Etheridge, he says, I love gay people.
Yeah.
You know, it's...
No, and I'm...
I don't think you get 20,000 member churches without having a political streak that is quite wide. You know,
exactly.
You have to be
Which
savvy.
Makes me inherently suspicious.
I agree. Yeah.
Yeah.
I, too, am suspicious. So I think we've kind of tied this one off pretty well.
Well, we're over our half hour sort of discussion limit, so we should
That's
probably
cool.
Wrap things
you
up
know, here. People will either enjoy it or not, and if they haven't,
it's
then they turn it
one.
Off way before this.
Exactly.
No one is hearing this but our true fans, and we really appreciate that.
We do.
And so, so that's it. It was Two Friars and a Fool talking about Rick Warren. A more balanced result at the end of it than we might have expected. And I think we've all learned more about the guy.
Yeah, exactly.
And I look forward to learning more about him and being able to yell at him and other stuff.
I'm looking forward to hearing what he has to say at his inaugural prayer on Tuesday. And
tomorrow.
We'll think
tomorrow.
A lot about like
say,
huh? That may change my opinion one way or another.
Oh, yes.
Because this is him. This isn't, I mean, like some of the other stuff, it's sort of like you can understand why he might say, like, sort of, you know, more derogatory
well,
it's comments.
It's
going to
say
this
a lot about
him.
His character because it's going to say,
this
what
is,
do you do with
yeah.
it when you're giving the largest possible national stage?
Yeah. Right. And what are you going to use it for?
Yep.
And
what
so,
are you going to say?
In some ways, I want to definitely hold my judgment until I see him, but it makes me much more interested to see what he's going to say tomorrow.
Definitely. So thank you very much to Nick and Eric for talking about this issue that I wanted to bring up. And thank you very much to whoever's still listening at this point. You're awesome.
And
yeah, way to
so,
go.
We'll comment on the blog.
Yeah.
Email
Please,
us.
Please comment.
Email.
Give us more feedback and ideas for future podcasts.
Yes, we are starving for attention. Can't you tell? We're making a podcast. Woo-hoo! We want you to love us. And we're out.
Okay, I'm hitting record.
Excellent. Hi there, my name's Doug, and I am the fool, because I'm about to talk about Rick Warren, and I have never read The Purpose-Driven Anything.
Hello there, I'm Eric, and I am the fool, because I am getting paid to be a pastor, and I'm still saying things on the internet that I shouldn't.
Hi, I'm Nick, and I'm the fool, because I have no idea why I'm the fool.